Good morning, everyone. Today is March 19th, 2024. There's a quorum present. We're going to go ahead and call this meeting to order. It is 10:04. You can all join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, moving on to item number three. This is public comment. Public comment is welcomed at the beginning and end of each meeting. These comments should be limited to matters not on today's calendar agenda. Public comment, again, is welcomed after each item on the agenda. Those comments should be limited to the agendized topic. Please note the public comment will be 3 minutes per individual. With that said, is there any public comment today?
Good morning. For the record, Gary Schmidt. I would like my exhibits to be placed in the record per the open meeting law and attached to the minutes, and I'd like the detailed substance of my comments to be recorded in the minutes. I've been a resident of Northern Nevada for half a century. I bought my first property in California. I fled California in 1972. I bought my first property in California. I just out of high school at the age of 18 in 1963. I am a candidate for District 1 for the County Commission here in Story County. I have a reputation throughout Nevada, especially Northern Nevada, as a citizen advocate fighting against abusive, intrusive, arrogant, oppressive overreach of corrupt government. My website is reformnevadapolitics.com. I brought numerous legal actions against public bodies, including city councils, county commissions, general improvement districts, and the state of Nevada. I've also brought actions in California and in Alabama. In that regards, I lecture on the open meeting law and the public records law. I have a handful of attorneys that consult with me when they have those kind of issues. Commissioners, city councilmen, lawyers attend my lectures. I have a couple of issues I want to point out today. The Story County Commission has historically been in violation of the open meeting law in that the liquor board, which is comprised of the county commission and the sheriff, is a public body. And therefore, it must have its own meeting and it must comply with the open meeting law, which includes an agenda posting. It includes provisions like a time, quote, certain. And it must include its own provisions for public comments in that meeting. It's not appropriate or legal or in compliance with the spirit or the substance of the open meeting law to bury it inside the county commission meeting itself. I have another issue that I made a public records request recently and was more than encouraged to submit that request in writing. There's no requirement in the public records law to submit any public records request in writing. Matter of fact, it specifically states it may be oral. So I wish that the County Commission address that and correct that. I'm going to submit this copy of the open meeting law for your review and just remind you that within the open meeting law that anyone on this body or any other public body that knowingly violates the open meeting law, there's provisions in the law that they are automatically removed from the office. Thank you very much.
Is there any other public comment today? Great, not seeing any. Moving on to item number four. This is discussion for possible action. Consideration and possible approval of the agenda for March 19, 2024. Commissioner Gilman, any questions or comments about today's agenda?
No comments, thank you.
Vice Chairman Mitchell?
Mr. Chairman, I was hoping that we could consider continuing item number 21, which is our acknowledgement of a letter from GOED about an abatement. I realize that there may be some implications there, so I'm wondering if it makes sense to leave it on the agenda and have a discussion under that item, as opposed to just asking to pull it at this point. I have some concerns.
Yeah, sounds good with me.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
Okay, Austin Osborne for the record. I just, whatever this board wishes to do on that item is fine. There is a time that GOED will take action on the item, and I believe that's going to occur before the next county commission meeting. So I'm happy to give you guidance if you kind of give me some clarification.
Yeah, and maybe we should wait and discuss it in more detail at the under this item as opposed to now. I think maybe that's the best room for it. That's fine. I'm fine with the agenda as it is. Thank you.
Okay. Is there any public comment regarding the items on today's agenda? All right, not seeing any public comment. Vice Chairman Mitchell, would you care to entertain a motion?
Yeah, I move to approve today's agenda as presented.
I'll second.
All right, there's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. On to item number five. This is discussion for possible action. Consideration and possible approval of the minutes from the February 6th, 2024 meeting. Commissioner Gilman, questions or comments about those minutes?
No questions or comments, thank you.
Mr. Chairman Mitchell?
No, thank you.
Is there any public comment regarding those minutes? Not seeing any public comment. Vice Chairman Mitchell, would you care to entertain a motion?
Yeah, I move to approve the minutes from our February 6th, 2024 meeting as presented.
Second.
All right, there's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Excuse me. On to item number six, this discussion for possible action. Consideration and possible approval of the minutes from the February 15th, 2024 meeting. Commissioner Gilman, any questions or comments about those minutes?
No questions or comments, thank you.
Vice Chairman Mitchell?
I'm good to go, thank you.
Is there any public comment regarding those minutes? Not seeing any public comment. Vice Chairman Mitchell, would you care to make a motion?
Yeah, I move to approve the minutes from our February 15th, 2024 meeting as presented.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. On to item number seven. This is today's consent agenda. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions or comments about today's consent agenda?
No, sir. Thank you.
Vice Chairman Mitchell?
I do not. Thank you.
Is there any public comment regarding today's consent agenda and the items on it? All right, not seeing any. Vice Chairman Mitchell, would you care to entertain a motion?
Yeah, I move to approve today's consent agenda as presented.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. On to item number eight. This is discussion only. No action, no public comment will be taken. These are committee and staff reports. We're going to kick things off at the Sheriff's Office. All right. How about the Fire Protection District?
Battalion Chief Bob Reiser, I'll be representing the Fire District for the meeting. Just a couple of things from our standpoint. We completed new hire firefighter paramedic testing this past week and had four very well-qualified candidates, which gives us the opportunity to fill our two open positions. Those offers will be made this week. And the candidates tested well enough that we'll actually have a list, which we haven't been able to have in a while, in the event that we have any open spots come to us through either attrition or something else over the next few months. We also had a small outdoor fire in Lockwood on Sunday. extinguished by residents prior to our arrival. Unfortunately, our unit was on a transport at the time, so they weren't in Lockwood. There's only one staffed unit there, and when we have an EMS call, that takes them out of their area. So we had to request mutual aid from Sparks as well as our units coming from out in the park. Fortunately, the residents there acted quickly and the neighbors extinguished the outdoor fire prior to anyone getting there or getting out of control or into structures or anything else. As far as fire district activities, those are the things that we're focused on right now.
Great. Thank you very much. Commissioner Gilman, you have any questions or comments?
No questions. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman Mitchell?
No, thank you.
All right. Appreciate it. Moving on to Public Works.
Good morning, Chairman, Commissioners. Jason Worsbicky for the record. Just a couple quick updates. Last week, the Last Town Road project went out to bid. Currently, there are about 9 bidders or plan holders. And bid opening will be in a couple weeks. And then we'll see what they're gonna say and go from there. Next item. Today, we are restriping the full length of Waltham Way out at the industrial park from USA to the Patrick Bridge in Waltham, or at Wild Horse area. And we're working on various projects through the Lockwood community today and tomorrow. And that's all I have.
Thank you for that update, Jason. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions or comments for Jason?
No questions. Thank you, Jason.
Mr. Chairman Mitchell?
No, thank you.
All right. Appreciate the update.
Thank you.
How about operations projects coordinator?
Mike is unavailable this morning. He is actively working on many projects at this time.
All right. That'll sum up the update, Jason?
Yes, it will.
All right. Thank you again. Appreciate it. How about business development director, Lauren Mather?
Good morning, Laura Mather for the record. I wanted to give an update on our federal community project fundings, or what I refer to as the federal appropriations. So one of the things that my department does along with the Porter Group is we follow these as they go through the federal budget from the first step of us submitting several requests, typically about 6, to the final federal budget. So I know Penny Coughlin at the last commissioner's meeting mentioned that the Gold Hill Collection Project had made it through the final phase of the federal budget. We just received notification from Senator Rosen's office that the Sheriff's Office McCarran substation request also made it through the final federal budget. So if and when that ever gets signed, we will be receiving $450,000 towards an $800,000 project for the substation. We will be receiving $2.5 million towards a $4 million sewer project in Gold Hill. Those are for the federal 24-25 budget. So we should be able to start spending those funds early 2025. So that's excellent news. So we're currently working on the 25 federal appropriations funding requests. In the past, we have submitted a minimum of 6 projects. When this program was first reinstated, it was kind of not real well known with the cities and the counties, but the word is out. And so they have become very, very competitive. So what we did this year is we are submitting 4 projects. As I've mentioned in the past, we are going to periodically talk about those at the commissioners' meetings. That is because when it gets too close to us possibly receiving those fundings, we have to go back and show that we have publicly discussed them. So we'll go back and look at these minutes and show where I've talked about them. So we're submitting 4 requests. We are submitting a request for the Divide Water Main line replacement. That will be a $1 million request towards a $1.6 million project. The Lockwood flood mitigation, so that's going to implement the fixes that were found when the study was done for the Lockwood area. We will be requesting $3 million towards a $4.6 million project. One of the things that was new, and I think one of the important, this kind of shows the important reasons for us to really create those relationships with the congressional members and their staff. So when Commissioner Mitchell and I were in Washington, D.C. for the National Association of Counties, I met with all of the staff. They were seeing a pattern where equipment, non-combative or non, that's not the right word, so non-use of force. Non-use of force equipment was being approved through these appropriations. So they recommended that we submit something under that. So we added a mobile emergency command center. So we will be asking for the total amount of $250,000 for that. And I would really like to thank our emergency management director, Adam Wilson. He responded to me, I think, literally within hours. So I sent him an email from Washington, D.C. I said, this is what I'm looking for. He had everything that I could possibly want, like in record time. So that was wonderful. The last one that we're going to be requesting is for Piper's Opera House. We are going to be asking $1 million towards a $1.7 million project. And that is going to fix the retaining wall that's between A Street and the back of Piper's. That also, there's an underground spring there that also redirects that underground spring that's currently heading directly towards the building. So again, we normally submit more. I'm submitting less so that we can really place a focus on what we really need, our top needs for this county. And it also really shows that we are not just throwing spaghetti against the wall and seeing what sticks. We are being very, very specific with our requests. And that is the end of my report.
Thank you, Laura. Commissioner Goodman, do you have any questions or comments for Laura?
Oh, just thank you for that professional approach. It's wonderful what you guys are doing. The money that's flowing into this county is due to your efforts and the team that you put on the field. So thank you for all of that. We're grateful.
I agree. Vice Chairman Mitchell?
No, I don't have any questions. Thanks.
Thank you again for that update.
Thank you.
Moving on to our administrative officer, Honey Coughlin. All right. Thank you, Honey. How about the planning department? All right. Thanks, Kathy. Emergency management.
And Commissioner Adam Wilson, Director of Emergency Management, for the record. Just a couple of quick updates. Tomorrow is our active shooter tabletop exercise for all the county departments. It'll be from 9 to 11 over at the EOC. The school district and the county are going to be participating in this, and it's going to be a really great learning opportunity for us. We have a meeting mitigation that I mentioned at the last meeting with the state, last board meeting I mentioned, that has been finally rescheduled. It'll be next Monday. And again, this is an opportunity for us to try and identify some projects with the state up here in Story County that we can start working on and they can assist us with. Finally, our hazard mitigation plan is going to be due for review coming up in 25. So starting this summer, I'm going to start that review process by forming a working group with the different county departments. And just as a warning, the lovely spring weather is going to end, unfortunately. So just be prepared for another active weather system this weekend. The Weather Service said there's nothing major that they're seeing, maybe some limited travel impacts over the Sierra, but enjoy the good weather while we have it. Starting Friday, it's going to turn again. And that is all I have.
Thanks for that great report, Adam, especially about the weather. Commissioner Coleman, do you have any questions or comments for Adam?
I do not, thank you.
Vice Chairman Mitchell?
No, thank you.
All right, appreciate it. Thank you. How about the VCTC?
Good morning. Tom Tuttle, Director of Tourism, for the record. A report from the various events that have gone on. Last week, we had the Mix and Mingle, where we had a chance to discuss Hot August Nights and a few other events were coming up. Well attended. And good discussion about moving forward with that particular event. Our next Mix and Mingle will be on April 8th, where we've invited the Chamber of Commerce to come and talk a little bit about how they're progressing and what we can expect to see from them. We had a great meeting with the Cultural Corridor Development Program, which was held last night at Piper's Opera House. Fairly well attended and good discussion about how that program will help bring more awareness to the culture and the arts and what Story County has to offer on these other venues in this new world of development and developing tourism. It's done in conjunction when we refer to the corridor as Carson Valley, Carson City, and Virginia City. So it was an excellent response to hopefully moving forward to receiving a grant that will our share of about $1 million that should be coming into the corridor to help promote and market it. On Saturday, we had the Rocky Mountain Oyster Fry to a tremendous success. We anticipated some large crowds based on the pre-sales that we had, but it did exceed some of our expectations of the number of people that were there. As some results, we sold more for the crawl than we've ever sold before, and it operated extremely smoothly. My hat's off to the Sheriff's Department for being there and the presence that's with it. As cars came and went, being able to have parking obviously was the same bottlenecks that we've had in the past, but again, Sheriff's Department was there to help direct traffic and make it run smoothly. Most of the people attending had very positive responses that we saw throughout the social medias, et cetera. We had tremendous response from the broadcast media. We had all three, well, four major stations provide interviews, live TV, broadcasts that went with it, and along with that, a backup from most of the radio stations also had specific comments along with it. So we had a tremendous impact with seeing the broadcast that was out there. The parade, we tried a different movement. We moved a little bit more forward into the center of C Street and provided a viewing area, which was greeted with very positive response from the merchants and the people attending. It meant a little more safety as they had space to see. They didn't have to dart in between cars or stand up and over cars. So we're happy with that, how that progressed as a result. Today, we've got a number of broadcasts that are going on as it's Women's History Month. And we have two representatives down with television stations talking about the women of the Comstock, the background and history of the Comstock. So again, some media exposure, bringing Story County into quite a bit of a positive light of what's everything that's up here. Coming up on the agendas is the Father-Daughter Day and Dance, which will be held on Saturday, April 13th. At this point, the dances are pretty much all sold out. We'll have a dance at 12:30, one at 2 o'clock, one at 3:30. And again, a very positive response from throughout the area. We have some people coming as far as Sacramento to attend this in an annual event that they've been before. The Grand Parade, it'll be the 53rd here in Virginia City. It'll be April 27th through the 28th. The normal route has some adjustments to it, so just everybody should be aware that there are a few things that we're working out on, tweaking a little bit to make it run smoother. And the Chili on the Comstock on May 18th and 19th, again, 10 to 4, both of those days. We're expecting record crowds once again as we continue to bring awareness of all the events and activities here in Virginia City. That's my report for the.
Thank you, Todd. Appreciate that report. Mr. Gilman, do you have any questions or comments for Todd?
Thanks for all the excitement. Virginia City's on fire up here in a good way.
Indeed. Vice Chairman Mitchell, anything?
I just had one question, Todd. The next Mix and Mingle, I think you mentioned the 8th. Is it possible it's the 9th? Is it the Tuesday?
Yes.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
All right. I have no questions for you, Todd. Thank you very much for that report.
Thank you.
How about the Comptroller's Office?
Good morning. Nothing at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. How about the Assessor's Office? About the Recorder's Office? An update today. All right.
Drew McPherson, Recorder. So I have an update regarding the project to make all Recorder's Office documents publicly searchable online. Our contractor, US Imaging, has finished redacting sensitive personal information such as social security numbers and birth dates from document images. My office will begin to integrate these images into our software, and I'll provide another update once this phase is complete. US Imaging is also almost finished indexing all deeds, allowing access to property transfer data back to the early 1860s. To research these documents, visit the Story County Recorder website. We remain on track to complete the entire project by the end of this fiscal year. And a big thank you to deputies Kaylee Galley and Morgan Wyman, who played key roles in managing the project. That's it.
Awesome. That was a great update, Drew. Thank you. Commissioner Gilman, anything for Drew?
Nothing at this time. Thank you, Drew.
All right, Vice Chairman?
No, I just want to say thank you for your commitment to this project and making those available. That's going to be a great improvement.
Thank you.
Indeed. I have nothing else. Thank you for the update. About the IT department?
Nothing today, Commissioner. Thank you.
All right. How about our human resources?
Nothing to report today, Commissioner.
All right. Thank you, Brandy. How about community development?
Good morning, Commissioners. Pete Renault, Director of Community Development, for the record. Just more of a statement. Spring is here, so my inspectors will be walking the boardwalks early in the morning and filling out the inspection sheets and taping them to the windows and doors of the merchants on C Street. It's that time of year again. Let's see if we can't get some of that boardwalk cleaned up and fixed before our heavy season hits. And that's all I got today.
All right. Thank you for that, Pete. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions or comments for Pete?
None. Thank you, Pete.
All right. Vice Chairman?
I'm good to go. Thank you.
All right. Thanks again, Pete. How about the senior center?
Good morning, Stacey York, for the record. I just had a few dates. The Lockwood building is moving forward. So we are having a town hall meet and greet on April 18th at 5:30. And this will be at the Lockwood building. And then on May 1st at 11 a.m. will be our groundbreaking ceremony to get rid of that building and begin building our new beautiful facility. And that is it.
Awesome. Thanks for that update, Stacey. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions or comments for Stacey?
I do not. Thank you, Stacey.
Chairman Mitchell?
No, thank you.
All right. Appreciate it. How about the DA's office?
Nothing today. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. How about the county manager's office?
Morning, Commissioners. Austin Osborne for the record. Just want to let you know and the public know that on March 28th, we'll have a town hall in Mark Twain. And we'll discuss the master plan update. The fire district will be there and talk about some programs they're providing in that area. And the school district is planned to be there and provide a presentation that you're going to see later today. So we're looking forward to that. That'll be at 5:30 at the community center, March 28th.
Anything else? Cool. All right, Commissioner Gilman, any questions for Austin?
Do not. Thank you, Austin.
Mr. Chairman?
No, thank you.
All right. Appreciate the update. How about the clerk treasurer's office?
Jim Hindle, Clerk Treasurer. I just want to update everybody that as of last Friday, candidate filing for the June primary closed. As a result of that, we are now in the full cycle of planning for that June primary. We're in election cycle again, and just want to let everybody know that more information will be coming out in terms of deadlines that would be coming up for input, voter registration changes, et cetera.
All right. Thank you, Jim. Commissioner Gilman, questions or comments for Jim?
No, sir. Thank you.
Vice Chairman?
No, thank you.
All right. Thank you, staff, for giving us those reports. We're going to get back on to next item on today's agenda, which is item number 9, board comment. Start off to my left. Commissioner Gilman, anything for us today?
Nothing new today. Thank you, sir.
All right. Vice Chairman Mitchell?
I don't have any specific comments off the agenda. Thank you.
All right. Neither do I. So we're going to move right on to item number 10. This is discussion only. Presentation by the Story County School District, planned K through 8 school facility expansion project.
Appreciate it. I will screw that up. Superintendent Todd Hess, Story County School District, for the record. Commissioner Gilman always told me if there's a microphone in the room, grab it. So here I am. I really appreciate County Manager Austin Osborne and the commissioners for putting us on the agenda. We have what we feel is
pretty important project, one that we've talked about for an awful long time. And it's our Virginia City Elementary and Middle School Campus Project. We call it the One Campus Project. As most of you know, we have four schools in Story County School District. We have Hillside Elementary, which is down the Truckee River Corridor in Rainbow Bend. It houses 42 students. And then we have our three schools up in Virginia City up here. So I'll be talking a bit more about that and appreciate the work that we have and the relationship that we have with Story County and Austin Osborne, and that he's invited us to go down to the town hall. Will be our first town hall next Thursday, I believe it is, on March 28th at 5:30, as Austin just mentioned. So why the need for new school buildings? What we're talking about here is Virginia City Middle School, which is just west of the Catholic Church, right off the only street light on C Street there that's never worked, at least as far as I know. And then Gallagher Elementary School, which is just to the south of that. About 7 years ago, I brought this idea up in front of the Capital Improvements Project Committee that we have with Story County School District. And it's not a capacity thing, as most of the public school districts in Nevada have a declining enrollment for a lot of different reasons. It could be homeschooling options, an aging population, all of those things that you read about. So full transparency, most of the time when you build new sites, you're looking at because you're beyond capacity. This is not the case. Virginia City Middle School, for example, was a public works project that was done, obviously, during the Depression in 1936. It's a great school, and it still is. The problem is the second busiest street in a really busy tourist town goes right through the campus. That was fine in 1936, all the way up until Columbine. And then, you know, we know the mass tragedies that occur on our school campuses on a far too often basis. So that's the crux of the project, mostly is in the name of school safety. But there are some other benefits as well. We talk about efficiency. Some of those efficiencies can be brought forward. You know, every school has its own secretary, librarian, janitor, things like that. If we can all get to one campus, we can be a lot more efficient with the way we staff things. Also, with the design team, we have H&K Architects, BOM, Kerry Richardson with Miles Construction and others. We're talking about buildings are a lot more efficient. You know, that middle school's in 12 years, it'll be 100 years old. So the legislature's looking pretty hard at some of our, you know, these aging facilities that we really don't have. Most schools don't have the capital or the capacity to replace those aging schools out. Then you look at the county benefits. We all know, Lance can talk about it better than anybody. We have the largest, most technological industrial park in the history of the world. That means that there's county services that, because of the monster that the county has built here. So the county would benefit by, as Austin and I have talked about many times, he brought a design team down about a month and a half ago, I would say, to take a look at the buildings and see how the county could utilize those buildings as we continue to grow from a county standpoint and an office standpoint and a staffing standpoint. The other thing that Austin can talk about a lot better is Saturday, for example. It looked like there was about 4,000 people in town there, and it's impossible to drive down B Street, which is right out front here, going two ways, let alone one way, and then D Street on the other. So Austin has some ideas on that with urban planning and some of those other things that he's talked to me about. And then the last one's the kicker, because almost no district in the state has the financial ability to, with the way construction is now, to build that building. You look at Marcy Hertz in Southwest Reno, that was built at $1,000 a square foot about 4 years ago. And so these construction costs, especially out west here, is killing the ability for districts to expand. But thanks to the miracle of Story County, we feel like we do have the financial ability. And I'll talk more about that, because President Carmona just headed a meeting of the Debt Management Committee. So I'll talk about that a little bit. All of these other slides will go forward. Again, this is the first kickoff of, we'll have about three town hall meetings, because we want to be very transparent with the folks of Story County. We're going to ask for $28 million worth of bonds. It's not going to raise anybody's taxes. So we want to say that, especially knowing that the polls just closed, and that's going to be a pretty important question. But we do want to take it to the folks. You know, we have our four big population areas in Story County: Virginia City, Gold Hill, Virginia City Highlands, Truckee River Corridor, and then of course Mark Twain. So we want to bring it to the people and take good input from them. So you have Carrie's done a pretty good job of educating me on what the project cost is and what the building cost is. So the hope is that we're looking at a standalone structure of about 37,000 to 40,000 square feet. This would house K-5, which is where the current Gallagher Elementary School is, and then 6 through 8, which is where the Virginia City Middle School is. They would be in one building, two different stories. So they'd be separated, but still in the same building. And then you can see some of the costs there. The goal is to commence construction either late this year, depending on when we get these town halls done, or even early 2025. And the goal is for our kids to walk in August of 2026. And then that's when the county would go ahead and occupy the buildings where Gallagher and the middle school is at. So here's an aerial here. It just sort of shows, I've been an admin of Story County here for 24 years. And during that time since Columbine, I've had 7 different safety experts come in. And they say, well, you just fence it. And I said, that's called D Street. And so as you're looking, that's an aerial there, obviously from the middle school, looking top is north and then south going toward the fourth ward there. So our inability to do something with that is, again, anytime I see a school shooting or school tragedy from, you know, Uvalde and Parkland, or unfortunately you can name hundreds of others, I look at that school and just think that if this isn't something that we try, this is something that's probably just the most important thing that we can possibly do if we have the fiscal ability to do something with that. So you have that there, which is the Virginia City Middle School. And then going to the south a little bit, there's Gallagher there, and you can see D Street. It doesn't go through the campus, but it's just so adjacent to it. That's where our school buses have to drop off. So if, you know, if you're thinking, those buses don't pick up inside a fenced area. They come out on the street, and that's what it is. Luckily, the sheriff's office has a porch that overlooks that school there, and I see Sheriff Cohen out there quite a bit. This is what it would look like if down at the high school. That's where our current property is. Austin has worked very hard with the lands bill to make sure that at some point we'll get an additional 32 acres of land down at the high school. This current school project does not exist on what that proposed 32 acres is. It's where we're at currently. It's property that we currently own. It's just to the south of where the current middle school is, meaning a little bit toward the transfer station. H&K has worked pretty hard to make sure that we've done a good job of really pushing down that structure. In other words, we don't want to, you know, one of the highlights of living in Virginia City is you got a 100-mile view out east. So we want to make sure that we don't take that away from our neighbors. And so we pushed it down as best we can. There's people far more experienced than me that can talk a bit better about that. So sort of excited about that. Here's some renderings. They did a pretty good job of having the flowery range in the background. So pretty talented people, whoever did that. That's kind of the look of that. I'm certainly not an architect, but the look of that is kind of like a mine office structure. You know, it's kind of the steel metal kind of thing. So that's one look. Again, this isn't anything set in stone, but you can see it's a two-story building. They've done a pretty good job of pushing that down a bit. These are things that we'll be talking about in the town hall meetings. Again, we met with, we had a debt management committee meeting last Friday and presented this to Mr. Carmona and those that were on the debt management committee. And so what we'll be talking about is the current situation with where we're at with funding and then our funding strategy. I think, again, the district can and has been authorized to use $28 million of bonds, and we can choose to use a lesser amount if that's what it comes in at. And then we also talk about December 31st of this year, 2024, which is when the Tesla abatements are due to expire. That doesn't necessarily affect Story County School District as much as it does with Story County, as we all know. And this is the information that will be supplied. And we'll have our bonds expert, someone that works very closely with Story County, Marty Johnson, to be available for comment. He can talk. I can talk about it from 30,000 feet, and he can get right into the weeds with it. So it's good to have him there. This is just more evidence of our goal for completion and how we cover the $28 million worth of bonds. This is the goal for completion. This is just sort of a timeline of that we're hoping to occur. And again, we want students to walk in August of 2026, and that's when county would come in and occupy those buildings as well. This is a quick look at the schools. I'll try to go through this fairly quickly. Again, anyone in this room, or if you know of someone that wants to come down and speak with me individually, it would be an honor, and I'd love to talk more about it. This is the K-5 floor right here. What's unique about it, we've looked at some other schools. Jaywood Roswan, it's the newest school in Reno, in Southeast Reno there. And in K-5s now, they're putting bathrooms sort of in classrooms there. And that sort of makes things a lot more efficient if you've ever tried to chase a six-year-old around. So anyways, they're on one floor there. And then 6-8 is on the opposite floor there. There's some pretty cool things with that. Just current designs, you know, there's a lot of technology there. There's a STEM room or steam room, phys ed, full kitchen, things like that. And one of the things that I've talked about, one of the things I dislike about the high school, if you've ever been in it, is the only windows in the high school face to the west, which is just a dirt bank. And to me, the star of Virginia City looks east. So we've tried to really use the visuals there because we don't want this to just be a school. We want it to be a community center. The folks could use at night, and there's a lot of function and use with it. So there's a lot of focus on things that we can do as it points to the east a little bit. Here's some more renderings here outside. That's to the east of the campus there. You can see a lot of windows, very open spaces. It's kind of like a university campus almost in a lot of ways. There's some things called hubs, and it's just sort of the way that, you know, we see the way that kids learn now. This I like a lot too. This is called CMU, which I didn't know what that was until not too long ago, but it's basically, it's more block, kind of like what the current high school is. I love this color here. As you know, our colors are silver and blue. Jake Lalder took care of that for us. And this sort of has that look. So we're sort of comparing costs and analysis on that. We'd love to hear your feedback on it, but we think it looks pretty sharp. Again, this is not possible without the great relationship that the Story County School District has with Story County. So I appreciate all the great conversations that we've had in the past and going forward. And if you have any questions, I will do my best.
Thank you for that update, Todd. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions or comments for Todd right now?
Exciting project.
Thank you. Chairman Mitchell?
Yeah, thank you, Todd, for the presentation. You mentioned, you know, the plan is to physically separate the different grade levels by floor. Are there other ways? I mean, I'm just concerned about vast difference in age ranges being in close proximity. What's the thought around separation, proper separation, and kind of keeping things where they should be?
Yeah, I appreciate the comment because you don't want 5-year-olds with 14-year-olds sometimes. And there's that. There's a number of buildings that have that. So we feel very confident in the way that with single points of entry and then other points of entry with that. One of the things, as you know, there is because we've looked at it, we would love to have a separate building there, but that adds to cost. And I mean, that drops very sharply once you leave that bus yard there at the high school as it goes down to the down toward the sewer plant down there. Sorry, I don't have a better term for that, but we've definitely looked at that. Because of the water and sewer mains there, this is not something that we can do a lot of cutting, you know, because we have to keep that in mind. So in a lot of that, we'd have to bring in a lot of fill, and to bring that fill in would pretty much bankrupt us. So that's why we sort of decided to at this point, to keep that as a two-story building with really good separation, with good administrative coverage there.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you for the question.
And I imagine there are things you can do with bell schedules and other things to kind of manage that as well.
Yeah, and that's a great question, too. The current bell schedule is Virginia City Middle School starts school at 7:55 and they're out at 2:25. And then for elementary school, they begin school at 9:30 and they're out at 3:30. So we feel really strong with the separation, but appreciate the concern because that's ours as well.
Yeah. Thank you. Exciting project. Thank you.
Yeah, agreed. The renderings look fantastic. Is there any public comment regarding this this item?
Again, if anyone has any comment, they want to look at it individually, or if you know of someone that's curious, I'd love to meet them.
Wonderful. Well, thank you again, Todd. Appreciate the update.
Thanks.
All right. Moving on to item number 11, this discussion only. Presentation by the Foundational Public Health Services. Assessment for Story County stakeholders to guide investment in prevention efforts that will help the United States avoid and or lessen the disruption of future pandemics and epidemics and focus on chronic issues as well as advanced equity. Stacy.
Good morning, Stacy York. For the record, Bob Hastings, the community resource coordinator, and myself are working with Amy Hines Sutherland, a public health coordinator of NACO, and she has a presentation on this assessment that we are planning to start. So, Amy.
Good morning. Thank you so much for the time today. I appreciate it very much. My name is Amy Hines Sutherland, for the record, public health coordinator at NACO. And I will, thank you so much. All right, so what we're here to talk about today is a foundational public health services assessment. And really what we're hoping to do is establish a baseline for local public health infrastructure. As you do with other projects, right? If you want to measure success, if you want to, steer a course for the future that is efficient and, is thoughtful with the limited funding that's available, you want to have a baseline. So we're talking about establishing a baseline and supporting all of Nevada's rural and frontier counties with this information. This is the team working on the project together, obviously with everyone locally in each of the counties. So it's a project with NACO and UNR Extension. We're working specifically with the Nevada Economic Assessment Project at UNR Extension. Joe Lednicki is the economist working with us on this project. And then Marlene Rabori, you see her up here on the screen. She's a community development specialist with UNR Extension and helps facilitate our meetings. Next slide. Oh, actually, I've got the clicker. I can do next slide. Okay, so why do we care about establishing a baseline? It enables improvement and increased efficiency. So right now in the county, you may have an awareness of what healthcare facilities you have. You may have an awareness of when environmental health inspections happen, for example, or how Nevada Health Center supports with community health nursing. But we don't have a comprehensive document that outlines all of the services provided at each county and by whom in each county. So that's what we're trying to get for you through this project to enable you to make improvements and increase efficiency around public health. Our county-by-county approach also enables regions to see where collaboration makes sense and where shared services may be a good option for you all. Data, it helps the county and local partners advocate for additional resources at the state and national level. So we're not going to go into this too much today, although I'm happy to answer questions about it. But for example, at the legislature last year, SB 118 passed, and that was a $15 million investment in public health for the state of Nevada. So you may already know what local projects you want to improve in public health, but as the advocacy efforts continue, and as there's additional state general dollar investment in public health, this baseline will help you understand where you might want to focus those dollars. And also, lastly, we're seizing an opportunity to utilize new costing and assessment tools. The Public Health Accrediting Board, that is a national partner on this work, they have been working for many years to establish some framework for public health that helps us benchmark state by state and county by county what public health services should be available to everyone everywhere in order for public health to function. And so we're utilizing those tools, not reinventing the wheel, but instead connecting Nevada to that larger national infrastructure that helps us make good decisions. What tools do you already have that help you support establishing a baseline? These are the tools that we're taking into consideration in this study. So first, the list of mandated public health services. I'll take a look at that, share more about that in a moment. State community health needs assessments, county profiles, You also have local community health needs assessments. Here we have, if available, you do have a local one, which is fantastic. And then finally, the foundational public health services assessment that I'm going to share with you today. So some examples of mandated public health services. So county boards of health, county health officers, health districts. Story County is not in a health district, so this one doesn't currently apply to Story County. And then there's also state mandated services. So no matter what decisions you make about what you want to take on locally, there's certain services that the state health department will always provide. And part of what we're doing in this assessment process is making sure you've got a comprehensive list. What is the state providing for us? As another thing to note about mandated public health services, you may know in 2011, the Nevada legislature passed Senate Bill 471, and this required rural counties to pay DPBH for public health services provided in the county. So Story County, for example, currently pays an environmental health services assessment. For this fiscal year, it's $32,844.59. So there's already some local investment in these services. We can continue to, you know, talk about that through this process and happy to answer questions there. State community health needs assessments. I've got two of the most recent ones up here. The state completed one in 2022. And local. So in 2022, Story County participated in a Quad County community health needs assessment. And so you've got that document to help you identify what are those primary health needs in the county. I think for Story County, some of the top needs that came out of that study were isolation of seniors, access to childcare that prevents people from getting to doctor's appointments, work, things like that. And finally, the topic for today, our foundational public health services county level assessment. So something I want to really highlight here is that this is a complement to the other health needs assessments that you have. The health needs assessments you have will tell you things like what's the prevalence of certain risky behaviors? What's the prevalence of, what are your cancer rates? What are your, what are the things that your youth are engaging in that you might want to get ahead of? This is not that. This is an infrastructure assessment. So it tells you what infrastructure do you have in place to help you meet those needs and respond to those needs. It represents a minimum package of public health services that every community should have or have access to. And the benefits, it helps us set a foundation for what's needed everywhere for public health to function. So I know this is quite small, but I do want to highlight there are five bubbles across the top. These are the program areas that we're going to be collecting information on. They are communicable disease control, chronic disease and injury prevention, environmental public health, maternal child and family health, and then access to and linkage with clinical care. Something I want to highlight here, public health is not the same as healthcare, right? So if you go to a doctor, you get treated for something, maybe you've got a behavioral health challenge, you go to a psychologist or a counselor, that's kind of a one-on-one service, a healthcare service. Public health happens more at the population level, right? So that's someone making sure that the food at your community events is safe to eat and making sure that the water quality for the community is good, making sure that certain chronic diseases have a plan in place. So for example, if you've got a prevalence of diabetes, it would be maybe, you know, implementing a diabetes self-management program through one of the community partners. So that's public health works on a population health level across those five core areas. And then for our foundational capabilities, there's eight of these. These include things like communications, emergency management, organizational competency. So you can imagine, right, if you've got a really strong communicable disease program, but zero ability to communicate out what you find, right? You identify, hey, we've got, you know, more flu this season, or we've got, you know, this particular disease coming up, and you can't communicate out to the community some preventive measures to keep them healthy, doesn't really matter if you have the program in place. So the idea here is to help with the systems that create a, you know, a strong organization, and also to have strong program areas. I did mention this on the last slide, but it's an assessment of public health infrastructure. It assesses your community's ability to deliver public health services. This is a screenshot of the tool. So the process actually all happens by survey. And it's not a community-wide survey. We don't just send out to the whole community. We say, hey, who are the stakeholders in the community that have a level of expertise in any of these public health areas? And, you know, what can they share with us about what services are available? We ask them to rate expertise, capacity and level of program implementation. And then also list the services available by providing entity. So for you all at the county, it's helpful for you all to know what are nonprofit partners providing in these areas? What is the state providing to us? What are we already investing in as a county? For example, your investments in environmental health and community health nursing. The expertise and capacity ratings are particularly helpful because you might find that you've got the expertise locally, but that person's way too busy to implement anything new. Or vice versa, you may find that you've got capacity, right? That maybe, you know, one of your organizations that's supporting you does have some additional slots to support community members to come in. But the expertise needed for, you know, particular individuals that come into that office is not there, right? So that's why we've got those ratings. And this is just a snapshot of one of the data sets that'll come out of this project. This is not accurate. This is an ongoing study, but you'll be able to see, for example, across each of those areas and capabilities, opportunities to work regionally, opportunities to just work within story. Maybe you'll discover that there are certain assets you have that you can support other counties with, you know, through MOUs or things like that. I do want to assure you this process has been happening nationally in many states at the county level, and it's helped get state general dollar investment for public health. It's helped improve the quality of life and the quality of the public health space for communities. So Washington State's an example. I know it just looks like a colorful grid here, but that's similar to ours, right? Those are the level of implementation of certain services at the local health department level in Washington. And then similar for Oregon, we've got some examples. So what does this look like for Story County? So timeline and next steps. On Friday, we're going to host a Zoom survey kickoff. We do that so everyone doesn't need to come in person. Everyone's busy. But it just presents to the folks on that call who have been identified as public health stakeholders in the community, the information that I just shared with you, and gives them an opportunity to ask questions about the process. The survey is open for 3 weeks. Agencies can receive a single survey or distribute among their teams. And then I just want to confirm today, too, what we do at the end is we have a 3-hour community meeting to review and verify those results. And again, that's with the survey participants. That meeting's actually critical. We've done this in 6 counties now. Every time we learn that the information that we collect through the survey process needs some refining, right? For example, hey, yeah, this service is provided, but it's only available in Lockwood. Or this service is provided and it's only open on Mondays in Virginia City, right? So we verify the results and make sure that we're delivering back to the county is accurate information. And I forgot bullet point number one, which is the most important, which is we would love commissioner support with this project. And so what that ask would be is just to participate in that community meeting, you know, to hear and learn about what's going on in the community and also bring your unique lens to the problem of it, right? And the assets of it as well, right? There's so much that happens at the local government level. You may be making connections that other community members cannot make by virtue of where they sit in the community. So happy to take questions. And yep, that's it. Thank you. All right, appreciate your time.
Commissioner Gilman, you have any questions or comments for Amy about this?
Additional questions. Thank you.
All right, Vice Chairman.
Amy, thanks for the presentation. I was wondering what if you give kind of a general idea of the expectation that these community health needs, what portion of them are met locally versus dispensation for making sure that they're available regionally, but not necessarily within the county, and kind of what we should have in our mind as far as looking at that.
Absolutely. Happy to speak to that. So Story County, so for 11 counties in the state of Nevada, DPBH, or the Division of Public and Behavioral Health, is your health department. So as your health department, the expectation is that these services will eventually be delivered by the health department. In Nevada, public health is drastically underfunded. So that's a really big goal. Even in states with a lot of investment, that's a big goal. But in terms of the where does that responsibility fall? I think really it is a collaboration. The health department, the state, DPBH, they do really those services that the state, what I should say is what they aim to do and what happens nationally often is that you have locally driven solutions, you've got locally delivered services, but it's state supported. So right now, the state, for the most part, both delivers those in-person services in counties. For example, environmental health services, they deliver that directly. And they also support at the statewide level with things like cancer registries and sickle cell registries and things like that. Where you decide to take this information is absolutely up to the county, right? And at NACO, we really understand that each county is unique and has unique visions for what health and resiliency looks like locally. So I would say the expectation with this is just that you have the baseline and you can make those decisions however you see fit. What I do think it enables is for you to have the conversation. Hey, do we want the state to continue to deliver this service? Are we satisfied with that level of service? Or is that a service we want to take on locally? And then there's a process, for example, with environmental health services, you can
recording stopped.
Gotcha.
Did that answer it? Or yeah. He's asking, you know, if it no, didn't it did. Quite
thank, yeah, it did. Yeah. Thank you. And so just for my understanding, if we were to join or become part of a health district, would that district take on a lot of those functions that are currently being provided at the state level? Is that typically how it works?
That's a great question. So yes, there. Well, interestingly, it's some of those services, yes. So, for example, health districts would take on disease investigations, really like that epidemiology piece that is like if someone goes into a health facility and they identify a particular communicable disease, that health district would follow up and do the contact tracing for that. The environmental health services would be taken on by the health district. Community health nursing would likely be, although there are examples where you can have a health district and if like a locality already has a strong community health nursing service, they can say, hey, we don't want that service through the health district. We're going to keep it locally. But there are certain things the state will always provide. So like healthcare facility licensing, state's always going to do that. These larger registries, state's always going to do that. So it's a great question. It's a little bit tricky in the state of Nevada because of the hybrid system that we have. But I would say if you move into a health district, that conversation, you can choose what the health district's going to take on beyond the like very minimal mandated services, which are communicable disease control, environmental health, and some waste management.
Thank you. Yeah, I don't know if the health district is right for us. I think we've been able to fill the need somewhat with some of our regional partners. I think in a lot of ways we're unique because I jokingly call us a suburban county because we're
right
up against the urban area, and so there are more resources. We're less isolated than a lot of the other rural counties. So interesting. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And on that, I would say, you know, there's many ways to develop public health in your county, right? It does not need to be health district or no health district. You can develop specific services that you need, you know, and I would say, kind of, you know, kind of build that muscle to the extent that you need it, right? So there's advantages of health districts, absolutely, but there's also advantages of you know, taking that route to identify service by service what you need.
Very good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Amy. I don't have any questions, but we'll go to the public and see if anybody does.
Thank you.
Are there any questions from the public?
Excuse me. For the record, Gary Schmidt, excellent presentation. I did earlier, actually last night and today, request a copy of the supplemental materials for this commission agenda, which I haven't received. There is a house copy in the back, and I'd like, if the PowerPoint is in that house copy, I'd like permission to take it. If not, I'd like to request a copy of the PowerPoint. And would like to point out that I really appreciate the Zoom capacity here in Story County, doing an excellent job in some areas. However, this screen visible from the commissioners, but not from the public audience here. one screen of that size or maybe a little larger over on that side, I think would be a vast improvement to encouraging information dissemination to the public and participation of the public. And if there's a financing issue, I happen to have a brand new screen that's a little larger than that one that I would be willing to donate to the county in that regard. But again, excellent presentation. I would have liked to be able to follow the PowerPoint. Thank you.
Is there any other public comment? All right. Thank you for taking the time to come up, Stacy. Appreciate it. On to item number 12, this is discussion for possible action. Consideration of a letter of interest for appointment of a planning commissioner to serve a remaining term representing Precinct 5, the Highlands District, on the Story County Planning Commission. Kathy?
Good morning. So Kathy Campbell for the record. So we had a planning commissioner from Precinct 5, which is the Highlands area, have to resign because of personal issues. And so we have advertised this position, and we did have one response for that position from Carlos Negrete. Staff had interviewed him and finds him to be a qualified candidate for this position. This position will end in December of 2024. So this year, this would be filling the remaining time that the commissioner had. And so then at that point, that position would then be open. I don't believe Mr. Negrete was going to be able to make it today.
I didn't see him on there,
but staff is recommending that he be appointed.
Sounds great. Thank you, Kathy. Commissioner Gilman, do you have any questions or comments for Kathy?
I do not. Kathy?
Vice Chairman Mitchell?
Kathy, I just wanted to confirm as far as this opening, you follow kind of the normal procedure as far as posting and getting the word out there. And
yes, we did our typical advertising that we did.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Is there any public comment? Not seeing any. Vice Chairman Mitchell, would you care to entertain a motion?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. In accordance with the recommendation by staff, I, Commissioner Mitchell, move to appoint Carlos Negrete to serve as a remaining term representing Precinct 5, the Highlands District, on the Story County Planning Commission.
I'll second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Thank you, Kathy. On to item number 13, this discussion for possible action, consideration of possible approval of the draft fiscal year 2025 Story County Capital Improvement Plan.
Hello, Honey Coughlin for the record. Let me just get set up here for a second.
Mm-hmm.
In working with this with county staff and Comptroller McCain, the reason that we're just presenting the FY25 draft at this point and not fiscal years 26 through 30 is because the following years need a lot of work moving forward. And we've been listening to residents and different comments from department heads that actively work with these projects, and we're trying to really create a more strategic way in which we plan out these projects and break them down further so that we're not at the beginning, or I should say at the end of budget season, still trying to see what projects that we need to continue undertaking from previous years and which ones that we need to roll forward into the next budget season. So I just want to make it a note that this is a working draft. Just because it's on the CIP does not mean it's going to make it into the final budget or to be brought back during the final budget for approval. So this is just, for now, like I said, a working draft. Once these projects, whatever ones, make it into the budget, then once that final budget is approved, this FY25 draft will be the hard copy and won't be subject to being a draft anymore. What I hope to do is moving forward, and once the this draft is approved, I would like to begin immediately working with the department heads to get the next fiscal years, 26 through 29, really buckled down, because as Comptroller McCain, she has to submit a 5-year CIP with her annual audit. So we'll be working with that, and then hope in the upcoming Board of County Commissioner meetings to just bring them forward for discussion and then final approval. So that's just kind of a outlook of where we want to go with this. One item has changed. I trust that you all got a copy of the new draft budget the draft CIP that I emailed out yesterday. If not, there are copies in the back of the room. One item has been taken off of this list, and I just want to mention that before I forget it. And that is project number E5-62. This is the Peterbilt dump truck plow sander that is going to be moved to fiscal year 27. So in talking with Public Works, that is something that can be placed out at a further date. So what I want to do, I don't want to hit every project because I think a lot of the line items are pretty self-explanatory, but there are some that may cause a little bit of confusion, and I just want to ensure that that does not happen. What we also did was want to make sure that each of the communities has work being done in the communities. And so we've featured several different items for the community centers to happen in each fiscal year. What I want to talk about now is the Mark Twain Community Center and how we're kind of moving forward with that, because there may be a little confusion once you end up seeing the following years that are after FY25 on how we're approaching this project. So last month I got approval to begin the design of the apparatus. It's going to be a new metal building down at Mark Twain that is going to be that temporary apparatus bay for the current fire district equipment. And so right now we're in the process of beginning the design phase of that. And once that design is complete next year in FY25, we hope to then build or construct that metal building to store the apparatus. When that happens, the fire apparatus will move to that building, and concurrently in FY25, we want to begin the design of the retrofit of the current Mark Twain Community Center. So, and then that would put the construction of the construction of the retrofit of the Mark Twain Community Center out to FY26. So we're kind of, it looks like we're doing a lot of work, but we're trying to make sure that the pieces for these projects move in line with how we can accommodate them, because we've been seeing that design for these buildings can take 9 months to a year, depending upon the size. So we're trying to like stagger them throughout the CIP to accommodate what we can handle as staff, and then also what our budget allows. In light of that, I want to mention the swimming pool. The swimming pool design is on here. And what we are hoping to do, because it is a larger design project, it's estimated right now that it's going to be around $1 million. And how we estimate that is what we are seeing, that the design portion of a project is usually 10% of the cost of the build of the project. At this time, it's estimated that the swimming pool is going to cost around $10 million to build. So we estimate that the design is going to cost $1 million. So because we don't want to have a lot of these huge designs next year, there are two on the CIP at $1 million. What we're going to do for this swimming pool is we're going to split the design phase of that. So we are going to begin the design of the swimming pool in January of 2025. So we look to expend just about $500,000 in fiscal year 24-25 for that. And then the other portion, the other $500,000, would be going into the next fiscal year, 25-26. Because also we have the design for the jail that we want to begin in FY25 is also $1 million. So we're going to try to stagger these larger projects in that way, that we aren't just undertaking the entirety of something that large in one fiscal year. And so that I wanted to make note of that as being some of the changes that we've made to how we're approaching projects on the CIP. And then the other project I want to mention that may change on this FY25 CIP is the Loustown Road. As Jason Worsbecky mentioned, that this project has gone out to bid and hope to begin construction in May. So this cost of $5 million that is on here, that is subject to change according to how much can be completed with the construction work in the current year, FY24. So I am available for any questions that you may have regarding these projects.
End of your report.
That is.
All right. Thank you. Commissioner Gumman, any questions or comments for Honey?
I don't have any questions, Honey. I would comment that I think it's prudent to be fiscally responsible in planning these projects. We believe we know what our cash flows are going to look like. And so certainly it's good planning to get ahead of that. However, we all look to see some changes in our future. So I applaud the fact that you have the plan in play, but that we're being very responsible with committing our cash, and we'll know soon enough. I'm confident and optimistic that our county is going to enjoy the revenue stream that we certainly have been anticipating for many years, and that we're putting them to work for all the residents of the communities, and they certainly deserve it. I can tell you, starting about 12 years ago, Gary Haynes and I worked together to address the fire department and to view the joint agreement with Lyon County and to turn part of the fire department into a community center and a senior center. And I've watched that community grow. They've done, in my opinion, a wonderful job, and they're certainly deserving of the facilities. So thank you for all the effort that you're doing, and I'm glad we're taking a fiscally responsible approach.
Thank you,
Honey.
Dude, thank you, Commissioner Gilman. Vice Chairman Mitchell, do you have any questions or comments for Honey?
My first one is just to echo the sentiment around the prudency of planning and express some appreciation for the level of sophistication that the work is bringing to this plan and the refinement of our planning and process. I think that's going to allow us to be more efficient and effective in how we do these things. There was a conversation that Honey and I had previously about a particular item that I think is currently slated for a future year and the possibility of bringing it up into this year. And that has to do with, it's a fairly small project, but it has to do with doing some surveying around the Gold Hill Depot to determine the exact lot lines and possibility for parking. The reason I brought it up and asked about the possibility of moving it into the current year is that the V&T Railway Commission has some lots adjacent, and there's been some discussion around a similar effort for the lots that they have down there. But they're on a bit more of a time constraint. They're looking at a shorter time frame. And so it seemed to me that there might be some efficiencies if we could align those and do them in concert in some way. But I do understand that there may be some uncertainty or clarification needed specifically around our rail funds and how those are spent, how those are authorized to be committed and used. So I don't know if the concerns are greater than the potential benefit of moving it up to align with the effort that's happening there. But I thought I would bring it up because if possible, and if I remember correctly, it's an amount of maybe $20,000 or something in that range. It was not a huge dollar amount. But I do understand there may be constraints from a process perspective.
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Mitchell, a point I'll make to that, and I know Jennifer will talk about the fund. So that sounds pretty good. It's just a plan at this point, and so it's not necessarily the budget. Jennifer will talk about how this becomes the budget. And so I don't see any reason why we couldn't explore that in the next week or so and kind of look at how that might dovetail into this before we come back to this board with further action.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. And that's, I think, why I mentioned it is because I know that this plan often informs our budget process, right? And that I thought that even if it didn't end up in the budget for whatever reason, it might be prudent to consider having it in the plan for the upcoming year.
It is currently in the FY26 CIP at $50,000.
$50,000, okay.
Jennifer McCain, comptroller for the record. I just want to state that we did have several rail projects that we have removed from the budget or from the CIP at the recommendation of the DA's office with some issues that are going on with that funding and where that tax and how we get approval for these projects. So they've asked for a year for us to only budget the support for the VNT, the $250,000. And then once that is resolved, hopefully next year we can move forward with the projects that we have planned.
Okay. I certainly recognize that that concern and want to be sensitive to it. I think one of the challenges is that ambiguity is not our friend, especially when it comes to one of my assignments is on the Railway Commission board, and it has to continue to operate. And so if there's ambiguity around how funds can or should be used, it felt to me like taking something that was very manageable, a small project, and using it as potentially an example or a test would help us get a little closer to understanding how exactly that needs to happen. But I'm not going to insist on that if it's not possible or advisable.
I am happy to open more discussions with the DA's office between the tentative and the final. But unfortunately, when you are presented with the tentative budget, it won't be in there.
Understood.
It's still the possibility to add it.
Understood.
Any other questions?
I don't have any other questions. Thank you.
Are there any questions from the public? Not seeing any. Vice Chairman Mitchell, would you care to entertain a motion?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Let me get back to the. I, Commissioner Mitchell, move to approve the presented fiscal year 25 Story County Capital Improvement Plan.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Thank you, Lenny. Moving on to item number 14, this discussion for possible action. Consideration and possible action to acknowledge that the $250,000 liability owed by the Nevada Commission for the reconstruction of the VNT Railway, a body corporate and politic of the state of Nevada, to the county of Story, a political subdivision of the state of Nevada, which was created in the VNT interlocal agreement in 2010, was eliminated in the superseding BNT interlocal agreement of 2020, and to direct staff to remove the liability in the appropriate accounting records.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Brian Brown, Deputy District Attorney, for the record. This item is a financial housekeeping matter that was brought to our attention as a result of an interlocal agreement between the Rail Commission and Story County back in 2010, there's currently appearing a $250,000 liability on their books to Story County, and that liability was related to the purchase of the old freight depot in Virginia City. Basically, the language in that 2010 agreement was that the commission was going to acknowledge a $250,000 one-time grant to match Story County's contribution of the same to purchase the old freight depot. Moving forward, the county went forward in May of 2020, on May 19th of 2020, on August 29th of 2019, and purchased the old freight depot. And then a new interlocal agreement was entered in with the Rail Commission. And in that new interlocal agreement, basically the debt was wiped out. It claims in the document, or it states in the document very clearly, that this the 2020 interlocal agreement supersedes that, and it eliminates that $250,000 obligation, but it still stands on the records as being owed by the commission, and it came to their attention, and we're trying to get that rectified, and that's what we're here to do today. Contained in the attachments or in the documents are the contracts that I've mentioned, as well as the deed that transferred the property, and the property is wholly in the name of Story County at this time, and that would complete my presentation.
Thank you, Brian. Commissioner Goodman, do you have any questions or comments for Brian at this time?
I do not. Thank you, Brian.
Vice Chairman Mitchell?
I just want to issue some thanks for taking this on and helping get it cleaned up. It's something that shows up year after year on the audit report for the VNT Railway Commission, and they're going, we don't know anything about this. Where did this come from? You know, there's turnover that happens there. And so kind of a lack of continuity, but appreciate the work to track it down and then come up with a way to address it. Thank you.
All right. Is there any public comment? Not seeing any public comment by Chairman Mitchell, would you care to entertain a motion?
Be happy to. I, Commissioner Mitchell, move to acknowledge that the $250,000 liability owed by the Nevada Commission of the for the reconstruction of the VNT Railway, a body corporate and politic of the state of Nevada, to the County of Story, a political subdivision of the state of Nevada, which was created in the VNT interlocal agreement of 2010, was eliminated in the superseding VNT interlocal agreement of 2020, and direct staff to remove the liability in the appropriate accounting records.
I'll second that motion.
There's a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion passes unanimously. Thank you, Brian. We're going to go ahead and take a quick 10-minute recess. See y'all back here at 11:40.